there, folks. It's been a while, yes, but I'm back with another hour of dorking out about beer and brewing, today with Mr. Steve DeMoney. You know him from Elizabeth Station, North Corner, Chuckanut, and currently Menace Brewing. His story is unique in how he kind of fell into the brewing community and his fate, but make no mistake, he is the real deal. This was recorded a few days before his move over to Menace, and we opted to not discuss that situation while it was unfolding in real time. Thanks again for being patient with me and us. I know it's been a couple of months since the last podcast from me, but if you enjoy these, please let the Tap Trail know. The future of these is directly related to listenership and feedback. Also, if you'd like to sponsor Tapped In, please contact Scott Pelton at the Tap Trail. All right, enough with administrative stuff. On to the conversation with Steve DeMoney. Enjoy. Well, Steve DeMoney, thanks for coming.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for making the time. I know you're super busy. Got quite the resume here in town. You've been kind of a part of a lot of the breweries that are currently here. Like I can think Wander, Kulshan. Did you work at Kulshan?
No, never had any part with Kulshan.
Okay,
no,
all right. No. I'm just looking at your shirt you're wearing. Sporting Kulshan shirt.
I drink Kulshan beer.
Yeah. Oh, well, sure. Of course. and Chuckanut.
Yeah, I'm probably Wander and Chuckanut as far as breweries are concerned. I probably, as far as total time spent in a beer establishment, Elizabeth Station, kind of in tandem with the homebrew shop, I'd double team that for almost 4 years, maybe even more than that. Try not to think about that too much.
Yeah, I knew that, and I knew that, and I spaced. Yeah, you know, I talked to Robert at one point, and I've always been firm believer that this brew scene that we are enjoying currently would not be as fully evolved and as competent as it is without Robert Arzu having been in town.
I agree. I feel incredibly fortunate with how much attention Robert gave me as far as like sculpting me as a brewer. A mentor to say the least, also a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And when you start going out to like, you know, you go to maybe a Master Brewers Association meeting in Hood River in the spring or whatever, and you run into other brewers and they're like, yeah, I was in Bellingham for a little bit and I worked at the homebrew shop. Yeah. And you just kind of see that list build and you're just like, man, yeah, that dude has kind of helped out a lot of us. And it's kind of a good lineage to come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And super grateful to him. And I still hit him up with questions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm in there all the time asking him questions. Cause yeah, he just sits there and just learns stuff. I mean, he's a doer.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, oh yeah, I did this. It's funny. It's become a joke, actually, that, you know, I'll ask him about something and be like, oh, yeah, I did that. Like,
yeah, of course you did.
You know, and it can be anything. You're like, I was like, hey, I'm going to do the Wonderland Trail. He's like, oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah. Just like, stop it. Leave me alone. Leave something for the rest of us, bud.
Right. Let us discover.
As a matter of fact, on Sunday, Robert and I spent the day co-teaching three friends about homebrewing. And they had brewed a little bit. Weren't quite happy with what they were putting out, and it was kind of fun to be like master and apprentice co-teaching these guys how to brew. And it was fun to see like what I learned from Robert and what I've learned outside of Robert's realm and how we could apply that to like one teaching strategy unintentionally.
Yeah.
I sound pretentious saying that. However, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. You're talking about yourself. You can't help but sometimes be like, I wouldn't normally say this, but since you asked,
for sure,
I'm going to go ahead and say it. Well, tell us a little bit about your brewing history. I mean, when did it start? When did you get the bug?
Sure. Didn't realize we were going to talk about Robert so much. I guess if I was going to start the story, I'd start with being interested in craft beer. And I remember, you know, growing up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, we always you kind of hated the hicks that were sucking down Bud Light, but Coors Banquet was very much like a family affair. Like you had to try.
Oh yeah, I grew up in Texas. I get it.
Like,
yeah.
and it's nectar of the gods.
Right.
I will fight you if you don't like Coors Banquet.
Oh, yeah. I drink
but Coors. I remember going out to dinner with my folks and my sisters, and we go to Applebee's, and that would be the night my dad would get the nice beer, and it would be Fat Tire.
Oh, okay.
And you get, like, you know, they'd pour you the 20-ounce Fat Tire, and that was a special beer for going out for dinner. So, you know, living with roommates, trying to do the college thing for a little bit, we felt like badasses by getting a 12-pack of Fat Tire, a 12-pack of Boston Lager, and a 12-pack of Killian's Irish Red. We just thought we were the hottest shit.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, like, you carried that into my, like, super snobby, like, early beer drinking days. And, you know, I'd never even touch a PBR, you know.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, when you're 22 and you just think highly of yourself. And then I got involved with the station early on. I think a week after they started, I started working there.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of, I mean, shit. I was 2012. I was 22.
Okay.
So I really got into the bottle scene hard.
I remember you being rabid. Like, you were just learning everything. That was one of the things you stood out. Like, you and Adrian, I'd say, were definitely there to learn.
For sure. You know? Yeah, and that's that perfect lead into what I was about to say. Adrian and I, and Matt Shannon, if you don't remember him.
I remember Matt. I didn't know him that well.
We would just ravage barrel-aged and sours, and we got so much exposure so quickly that we all got really excited, and we all kind of had ties to different parts of the country, so we could get beer that we couldn't get out here, mm-hmm. and that was exciting. And then our zoo had tapped me to help him out at the homebrew shop and really just steered me towards good literature. Of course, The Complete Joy of Homebrewing, Charlie Papazian.
Who's retiring in January.
God bless him.
Yeah, as he should.
Yeah. Charlie P's the man, 70 years old. He should be retired.
Absolutely.
Go sit on a beach somewhere.
Yeah. And have people hand him homebrews.
Yeah. Totally. So I kind of went down that route with, you know, doing this bottle thing, doing the homebrew thing, watching, you know, me take over my end of my wife's small apartment with beer books and brewing equipment, and you know how it goes.
Oh yeah, no, it's a struggle. You know, this is my wife's room, and my beer in there is not really okay.
Totally. And then coming up on the first anniversary of Elizabeth Station, Patrick McAvoy, the owner of the station,
who's somebody that I need to sit down with as well.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah. You won't get much time.
Oh, I know. I know about it. I know about trying to get Patrick.
Yeah. He's a busy dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had this idea that it would be cool if the station had their own anniversary release and bottle and draft format. And he just said, well, you work at the homebrew shop, so take that on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had totally out of my league, had no idea what I was doing, couldn't even fathom commercial brewing at all. Sat down with Robert. He kind of coached me through what it would look like to make, you know, 15 barrels of beer as opposed to 5 gallons of beer. And I hit up a couple breweries in the area and went down to 2 beers and brewed a beer mm-hmm. with them and released it.
That.
And that was exciting. Everything was exciting until the day of that anniversary party. It hadn't occurred to me that people might actually fucking hate that beer. So I stood in the back in like a cold right. sweat, just watching everybody, just being like, they're going to kill me. They're going to hate it.
Yeah.
And it went over.
It's hard to release your baby out into the wild. Yeah. And just be like, well, some people aren't going to like it, and I just have to be okay with that.
For sure. And fortunately, it was received well, and that kind of high of having people be excited about something you make and wanting to talk to you about it.
It's the best.
Like, I still can get my fire lit from that every day.
Oh, yeah.
Going to work.
Every creative person, I think, you talk to actors, you talk to musicians, as soon as the moment for them is almost always either somebody paid for it and liked it, or just somebody, I did something and people liked it and I liked that feeling. And yeah. That was it.
And I think if you're not creating something outwardly, that might seem like a selfish feeling, but it's totally the opposite. It's totally like, I feel so fortunate to be able to have shared something that people were able to bond over and have conversations and loosen up and and maybe make friendships, especially with a place like the station. That place to me is all about new friendships.
It's community.
And to help in some way facilitate that is about all I need.
That's awesome. And so branching off of that, when did you ramp up? So how long did you homebrew? Were you brewing at all before Elizabeth Station?
No, I wasn't. Okay. No, like Robert, again, we would have like some pretty good dialogue about beer profile, and maybe saw it in me before I saw it in me. It was just like, I think this guy could be a fair brewer. And, you know, once I got on with him, really started cranking into it. Chris Brim, Bill Arthurs, Michael Gann, Randall Ragsdale. These are like the original homebrew guys that I hung out with, and they just poured information on me.
Yeah. Nice. Brewers love talking beer.
Totally. It was this constant, exciting conversation every time you saw these dudes. And I was working nights bartending, and they would come in and drink, and they'd just belly up at the bar, and we'd just talk beer and homebrew process.
But only three at a time.
Only three at a time.
not a bar.
Not a bar. We had always entertained
in the early days.
We always wanted, because people always threw a bunch of shade at us for not having any stools at the bar. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make t-shirts that said, "I stand for Elizabeth Station." Never got around
great.
To it.
Oh, that would have been great, though. Still do it.
You still could do it. You're welcome, Pat.
Yeah, exactly. So what was the first beer that you brewed? Was it that one at Two Beers?
The commercially?
Well, no, just at all.
At all.
You started homebrewing.
My first homebrew was the Cascade Pale Ale recipe that Robert supplies at the homebrew shop. And he told me to just take that beer and brew it five times and change something every time.
Yeah.
And
sage advice.
I picked that recipe apart and I threw a bunch of hops in at the beginning and had this bitter shit beer with no aroma. Threw a bunch of hops in at the end. I had this super aromatic beer with no bitterness to complement malt profile. And it was just like, oh, I'm actually learning as I'm brewing this. But it probably was terrible. To me, it never seemed like a terrible beer I was putting out.
Was it the extract kit or were you doing
all I was doing extract. And then I would piggyback.
You can make great beer with extract. People shit on it, but
they
the quality of extract these days, you're not just opening up a can of John Bull.
Totally.
You know,
I totally agree.
It's pretty good stuff. And with some attention to detail, you can make really good beer.
Absolutely. And my all grain explorations were mostly with Chris Brim. We would kind of geek out on that stuff. While Matt and Adrian and I were brewing extract batches pretty much at each other's house bi-monthly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in my first year of homebrewing, I think I did 115 gallons. Just went.
Cranking it out. Yeah.
And then after I started doing more and more of these collaboration brews for the station, which kind of seemed to be about once to twice a year, that really started to pique my interest. Seeing different systems was super exciting. It's also fun to like travel around and meet brewers. And,
I would love to be a gypsy brewer.
Oh, never have to. And I got a hotel once when I was gypsy brewing.
Yeah.
Mostly it was just like, oh, we're going to brew all day and I'm going to crash on your couch and now we're best friends forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an invaluable thing in our industry.
Brewers are pretty chill.
Yeah, most of the time.
And brewers' partners have to be pretty chill.
Until you spit on the floor. Don't spit on the floor. That's sacred. And then working with Chad and Colleen over at Wander on their first year, got a ton of exposure there and much more of day-to-day brewing operations. Filled a lot of hats with them.
Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I don't really know all that well, but he seems to be very well versed in the science behind things.
Yeah, well, and Chad's an engineer, so it fits him. But he's also really he sees the best in people and wants them to capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of, in my experience working with him, it was kind of like, I know you can do this go do it. Like, I'm here to help you.
Right.
And then coming off of that, I kind of got itchy for the bottle scene again and did that for one more year and then realized, man, I should be back in a brewery.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like something maybe I was like, oh, maybe I'm going down a path where maybe I'm not a brewer. Let's go back to the bottle scene. You know, it'd be super exciting to get back on, like, the releases and to talk to all the bottle nerds and, especially being back in the neighborhood that Elizabeth Station is, like, I missed seeing those people every day.
Yeah.
And quickly realized that I am a brewer and I can't not.
Yeah.
So.
No, I hear you. I mean,
started knocking
that was,
on the-
yeah, that was kind of the thinking with Subdued. It's like, you know, I need to be doing this. And I mean, I always was doing it at home, but I thought I want to do this again professionally. But yeah, it's funny because in the time that Chris and I were working on it, in that 5 years, everything changed.
Totally.
You know? And
yeah, this industry has moved,
you know,
it's gained a clip in the last 5 years.
Yeah. But also the game has changed. You know, the standard of, okay, you need a 15 barrel system, you know, with at least one double, and you're going to do this much production on site and you're going to do, you know, this much, you know, distribution. That's dying.
And yeah, and we have the data that says that that is dying.
Smaller is better.
Yeah, and
I mean, not that you can't exist at that level. It just takes
for sure
a certain amount of capital and a certain amount of drive to do it. You know, I mean, obviously, Kulshan, Aslan, you know, those guys are crushing it. But
they're doing fantastic. But yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, if you enjoy the process and you enjoy recipe formulation, that's great. Operating a brewery just with those two passions might not be enough to move you through. Marketing is so key.
So
sales staff is key.
Running the business.
Staff is key. Administrative aspects are key. Maybe it's a good thing that scares some people away from opening a brewery.
That's probably true.
You know, I do feel fortunate that I had the support and the ability to kind of bounce around the industry to where I thought maybe I needed to be or wanted to be, you know, leaving a full year of working at a brewery and seeing how that startup goes and being like, okay, gonna reassess, going back to the station and being like, okay, am I trying to build my own thing? Is that the goal? Like, how am I finding my place in brewing?
And I think being around at the formative years of a brewery is probably the best commercial brewing education you can get, because that you see a lot of the things that could go wrong.
Sure.
But obviously, you know, in the breweries that you've been involved with, they have overcome them and have thrived.
Yeah. And I guess I hadn't realized it till saying it out loud. Starting at the Nut, in the middle of putting in South Nut, seeing like what an expansion looks like compared to starting out, the same shit still comes up.
Oh yeah,
which is crazy.
Yeah,
you're just like, man.
That was ultimately what made me decide the first few days of January this year that I was done with Subdued.
Yeah,
things were rolling. But once I realized that every single little thing that I'd already done once
was going to have to be
done again, yeah. You know, like all the architectural drawings, all of the dealing with the, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's a year and a half out.
I have immense admiration for any small business owner. In breweries in particular, mostly just that's what I'm familiar with as far as businesses go. Like, you have to be concerned about production. You have to be concerned about that product quality all the time. You also have to be concerned about your front of house. Like, are there people there to pour that beer? What if somebody gets sick? How are we branding? Are we at the right events? Are we not at the right events? How far down do you want to go? Are we getting the right hops? Are we staying relevant? And is it something that you can do with your business partner for 2 years and really burn out? Or is it something you want to invest in head on? Like, you just go on and on and on about all the aspects that go into running any level of brewery.
Yeah. Or just being one of the brewers. Like, that was one of the things that burned me out at Boundary, was I was spending my summers every weekend at a festival, which, you know, people hear that and they're like, dude, you're living the dream. It's like, nah, well, you got to go down there. You got to set up, you got to do it all day, mm-hmm. and you can't really drink. I mean, you know, we would, but you can't drink like the other people are drinking,
sure.
because at the end of it, you got to
pack it all up
and drive away.
Yeah. There's oftentimes at festivals, you'll see brewers working, and some of us are less sociable than others as far as brewers' personalities go.
Yeah.
And that might be a bad move for your brand. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not thinking about any brewery in particular, but it's just like, well, if you got your grumpy ass brewer who just worked 50 hours a week, his back's tired, he wants to maybe be camping or sitting on his back porch because it's July and he wants to chill, but it's the busy season. So now he's at a festival and maybe he's a prick
sitting
to somebody.
In a parking lot or inside somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And he rubs somebody the wrong way and all of a sudden your brand looks like shit. And it's like, well, was it maybe worth hiring somebody for 25 hours a week in the summer to run events?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe so. Yeah. But it's easy for me to say when I don't have money on the line.
Right. Yeah. Are you good? You want to take a break? Or
I'm good.
Okay. So we had, I don't know if we were recording at that point, but we were talking about beers that we were, you know, drank early on. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what your very first beer was?
Deciding between... legally or illegally?
Oh, you can say illegally. I mean, I don't think Border Patrol's listening to this.
No, I definitely...
The statute of limitations is
gone. I definitely stole a, like, 24-ounce tall boy.
Now, stealing is illegal.
Stealing? Okay. Well, I stole it from my dad, so...
Okay, all right.
It was a 24-ounce Old English, and I split it with my buddy in high school. And it sucked. Not the quality. I don't even remember what it tasted like at the time. I know what it tastes like now.
Mm-hmm.
all I know is that, like, we had scrounged up like 6 cigarettes from bumming people at the mall and we had stolen a can of beer and we were going to have the best night.
Doing all the things
and
right now.
We smoked 3 cigarettes each, split 24 ounces of Old English, felt like garbage. Almost immediately.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's not a recipe for happiness.
And then I decided, well, I'm not going to drink Old English anymore. Little did I know.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't say, I'm not going to drink beer anymore.
Right.
then, we wouldn't be sitting here.
I had, you know, and then I'd kind of boned up enough on like nerdy beer stuff. So on my 21st birthday, you know, I go to the Cowboy in Cheyenne, Wyoming at midnight. And it's this like country music bar, neon, and it's Copenhagen and Bud Light, and that's what you're gonna get. Their craft handle. There was no handles, it was all packaged, was
Okay.
New Belgium Fat Tire. So for my first legal beer, I wanted a Fat Tire.
Nice.
She handed me a bottle, bartender did.
It was only 5 years old.
And I was like, oh, I have to drink it out of the bottle. And she's like, it's either a bottle or a plastic cup. What
kind of asshole are you?
And I was like, ah, shit. Yeah, bottles fine. And quickly realized, like, you know, there's time and place to be an asshole. And this is not one of those times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every beer has its place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's plenty of bad beer out there. But
I wouldn't trade that Fat Tire out of the bottle.
No.
Like sucking down secondhand smoke and listening to some shitty country cover band for anything in the world.
No. It's a great story and you were there and it happened and that's your history.
Yeah. Drinking that Fat Tire on my 21st birthday and then quickly moving on to just like somebody's buying me shots and, you know, getting a ride home, passing out, waking up because my brother-in-law or future brother-in-law was going to take me to New Belgium.
Oh, nice.
For the tour for my birthday present.
Oh, sweet.
So having Fat Tire in that smoky bottle and then having it on draft right at the source and going and seeing the tour and learning
nice.
All
so
about it.
So you did go.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Made it there. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess Fat Tire's done a lot for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems to have served you well. And so you might have already answered this question, but a question that I always ask is, what's the beer that, well, it might not have been that, actually, considering that you didn't start brewing until later, but what's the beer that flipped the switch for you? Was there a beer, a single beer, where you drank it, beheld it, and like, I need to know how to do this?
Yeah. That's funny, because this has been, it's been a hot conversation with my friend group over the weekend.
So hot.
About everything's so hot right now. Like, kind of, you know, in some form or another, beers you can't live without, or desert island beers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be another question, so you can answer that at the same time.
So we had piggybacked off an article that I had read just prior to the weekend. And so the parameters were, you get four.
Oh, nice.
But as we learned,
so generous.
We learned you only really get three, because one of them has to be Sierra Nevada Pale. Because everybody's like,
the most common run thread throughout these conversations, yeah, Sierra Nevada Pale.
And that was, you know, that was a beer for me, like working at the station and just being like, Adrian and Matt and I, we just got so fucking ripped, burnout, and palate fatigued, and gut fatigued, and wallet fatigued on sours and barrel aged. And it's like, God damn it, man. I just want to drink a fucking beer. Yeah. Like, I just want to go home and drink a fucking beer.
I know it's going to be good no matter where I am.
Yeah. And
get it anywhere.
And it's, you know, it's always Sierra Nevada Pale. Yeah. You're just like, well, it's everything anybody ever wants.
Yeah.
And if you don't want Sierra Nevada Pale, you don't want to be a part of our friend group. And that's right. Fine. We got plenty of other people who like Sierra Nevada Pale.
Yeah.
Get in line, buddy.
I love Sierra Nevada. Just in general. I have a standing order at the co-op, and I actually have some in their fridge.
Yeah.
Two cases of Celebration right when they come out.
Always.
Always.
Yeah. There's two beers in the world that I will wake up craving, not in like a drunk, lush way. I'm having that today.
Mm-hmm.
And I might even wait a little bit longer to have that beer just because I like this feeling of like, oh, I'm going to have that today.
Yeah.
Sierra Nevada Pale. I don't have it in my house all the time. I don't drink it all the time. But when it comes into my mind, it's like, well, I have to have it today. Mm-hmm. I have to. And the other one is Chuck Nut Kolsch. And that will be something that, you know, you travel out of Bellingham. For me, we spent a lot of time in the Southwest, and I just miss the water in general.
Mm-hmm.
I just miss having good quality tap water.
Yeah.
And it's tap water and Kolsch.
What part of the Southwest?
Phoenix, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. But Kolsch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get it. Like, I can get Sierra Nevada Pale in Phoenix. I could be in Fargo and I can get Sierra Nevada Pale. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. So I know that that's always there. But Kolsch is like this thing where it's like, oh, I have to be in Bellingham to drink that.
Yeah, it's straight from the nipple.
And I love it.
Oh, yeah. No, we're so spoiled.
We are.
Seriously.
So my four, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, Anchor Steam, Kokanee, Kolsch.
All right. All light.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You seem surprised.
Oh, I'm not necessarily surprised. I mean, well, that's usually people don't, they're not as ready to go with a full like four or five, you know, things. But,
well, talk to me tomorrow. It'll be something else.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But almost everybody has come down to Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Yeah.
Like the desert island beer. If you could only have one beer for the rest of your life.
That's it.
That's it.
You can have one of them and it's enough, or you can have 12 and that's plenty too.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, you're running into that, and you're running into like Saison DuPont.
Yeah.
Like, oh, everyone's just like, God. Well.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah. I just like beer. And so, and it's so subjective every day. You know, like, I don't want a double IPA when it's 100 degrees outside.
No. Or ever. Yeah.
So where is this island exactly? What's the weather profile?
What kind of food will I be eating with my desert island beer?
Yeah. So kind of running along those lines, the one or four beers in your case that you would take to a desert isle. What's your guilty pleasure? And it doesn't even have to be beer. I've been shocked at the number of answers that have been something other than beer. Like, what drink-wise, at least, is your guilty pleasure?
I don't diversify that much as far as alcoholic beverages go. I kind of stick to beer. It's not a guilty... I don't feel guilty about anything I drink. If you want to throw shade at me for, like, getting down on Banquet or Kokanee, and I know there's somebody out there who's already writing their comment being like, that motherfucker.
You're assuming people listen to this. That's so yeah, cute.
That's true, too. Either way, fuck you. You want to come drink 6 Kokanees on my boat sometime? You're going to enjoy them.
Yeah.
You can put your barrel-aged snobbery aside.
Right. Because it's the perfect beer for that.
Yeah. Not saying you need to have that when you're like ice fishing.
Yeah.
Probably be good for ice fishing. It's Kokanee.
Yeah.
It's already a fish. I have never had a pink beer that I didn't like.
Pink beer.
Like the color pink.
Oh.
If it's pink, the inclination is I'm probably going to like it. 10.5%, this barrel, this fruit, this whatever, right. This blend. I'm just like, all right. And you pour it and it's pink. I'm like, fuck. I'm going to like that. I know I'm going to like it. And I drink it. I'm just like, son of a bitch. Got me again.
You need pink boots.
You should have pink boots. No, that's for our lady brewers. It's only for them.
It's only for that. So I guess, we were talking earlier about just the brewing industry in general and how much things have changed.
Sure.
You kind of have a unique perspective because you were just kind of plopped right into it in the midst of all of this change that was happening, not only local, but, mm-hmm. Nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the time that you started up until now and into the future, how would you describe the beer industry now? What do you see rolling down the line in 5 years or 10 years?
Sure. I've gone to a couple conferences as a professional brewer and kind of had the energy that was provided by whatever organization was hosting that conference as to expand, and you're not relevant if you're not expanding.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was not the relevance aspect of it, but expanding was a pretty valuable aspect of a lot of breweries in the 5 to 6 years ago. Given the numbers that we have now, it seems a little reckless, in my opinion, to be trying to double or to triple or to put in
completely.
Yeah. You know, we're gonna have 3 locations and everybody's gonna be brewing this and that. That's just my feeling. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think that fortunately for every beer drinker and any beer consumer, the focus on quality in the last 5 years has risen to the top.
Mm-hmm.
The consumer palate is so much more sophisticated now.
And I think brewers are more competent than they ever were.
I agree with that as well.
Generally speaking,
present company excluded. Well,
no. I just meant like, the early brewers were just rabid home brewers, but... Mm-hmm. And you still certainly have that, but it's much harder to break into it with that level of knowledge.
Which goes back to what we talked about earlier, being like, okay, well, you're opening a brewery or you're running a brewery and all of a sudden you have all these other things to consider. Where's quality on that list? How high on that list mm-hmm. is it? What are you sacrificing for quality? Because in my opinion, you should sacrifice everything for quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have this beer on right now because we didn't want to serve it to
it's
you.
It's not up to snuff.
Yeah.
Totally agree. So I see a lot more of that coming around, and quality as far as actual product and quality and branding. I've seen a lot of breweries really polish up mm-hmm. what they look like on the shelf or what their brand persona is. And in the next 5 to 10 years, I think I would like to see, and I think I will see, better quality, more brand to product relatability, and more local. It almost, it just sounds so shitty to say it. It's just such a buzzword. Like hyper local is good. Like the best beer you can drink is the highest quality beer that's closest to you. And if you're in Tulsa and the highest quality beer that's closest to you is in Austin, then drink beer from Austin.
Yeah. I throw around the term hyper local all the time. I think that that's the future.
Yeah.
The future of really good fresh beer.
Sure. And I love being in the middle of nowhere and again finding Sierra Nevada Pale. I depend on that beer to be there for me, so I don't have to drink some garbage that's being peddled around and you know bought shelf space for.
How do you see the different regions of the country? You know, because I'm a firm believer that every region has its own preferences.
At the same time that it's good to have a little bit of everything everywhere, I kind of like the, you can only get this here, and that's just it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I was speaking about earlier, like, I really like that when I have Chuckanut Kolsch, like, I'm in Whatcom County, and it's like, that is part of the experience. Like, having that beer out of that context, I don't know how it would feel because I've never felt that.
Right. Right.
But
because you've never had to.
Because I've never had to, and I frankly I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's perfectly valid.
I feel like we could be cautious as an industry, not to homogenize too much.
Mm-hmm.
While we're sharing styles and following trends and making sure that those that every customer that we want to serve is getting their needs met without turning into just this kind of like murky, it's all sameness anyway. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can get this Pilsner from this brewery or you can get it from this brewery and it's all just Pilsner.
Yeah. You
know, there's no individuality to it. That seems scary to me.
I agree. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about smaller breweries is, you know, I don't, and I'm just throwing out names at random. I'm not thinking of any specific beers or anything, but I don't go to Kolschen for the same reason that I go to Chuckanut, for the same reason that I don't go to Aslan or Boundary. You know, each one is its own thing, and it's
own part aesthetic. Of
the, yeah, it's that certainly, but even just beers, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, like, I don't want to drink a double IPA in 100 degrees. You know, beer is so subjective, or ever. I wasn't going to say that, but yep, I will say that. Yeah, I was so happy. I didn't drink IPAs for 10 years while that whole thing was going on. I was just done. I remember when I was talking to Aaron Smith, he's like, yeah, you were kind of a pissy little bitch about that. I was like, I totally was. I was just like, I won't even get rolling on that. But
an Aaron direct quote.
absolutely a direct quote. But, you know, it's not even just what beer do I feel like right now? You know, kind of the same thing where you were saying, I wake up and I know that I want this beer before I go to bed today. Yeah. You can have it be, well, I want to go to this brewery today just because I want to try their staple of beers.
Or feel that space.
Or feel that space, certainly. Yeah.
Which is the cool thing about being hyper local and being in our direct market.
Is, dude, that's so douchey. Why did you say that?
What?
Hyper local.
Hyper local, man. No. So hyper local. We're just jumping up and down about being local.
I like the term hyper local. I'm totally just kidding. But
is there a hyphen?
I think there should be. Yeah. I think grammatically, to be grammatically correct, should be.
That's the important
And all
shit.
Brewers are kind of type A, right?
Yeah. Let's get into grammar really quick, just for a second. Yeah. Full stop.
Yep.
I enjoy that as well. And, you know, when you have folks come into town, we have such diversity of space in this community. immediately comes to mind is like the intimacy of Structure's Tap Room. It's such an intentional space, and like, mm-hmm. this is what we're doing.
I like all the wood.
This is why we're doing it. And there's no question. Like, you don't walk in, there's no ambiguity. It's like, mm-hmm. this is the space.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And having that intentional atmosphere with Boundaries Beer Garden in the summer, you know, totally the opposite. Mm-hmm. This is dogs and kids and live music. Yeah, hula hoops. And like, and I can choose that at any given time.
Yeah.
Whether it's a Tuesday night or a Saturday afternoon.
It's a wonderful problem to have. You know, like, what kind of crowd do I feel like hanging out with?
Yeah.
But wherever I go, I know that the quality of the product is going to be good. Yeah. It's just,
And you're going to bump into somebody that's excited to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Always, always, always. Where do you see things moving forward, 5 years, 10 years, and you don't have to get specific and just generally, I mean, you're plugged in right now.
Well, yeah, I'd hinted at quality.
Well, I hope that the quality always remains. I mean, I think the level of quality has just risen so much. I remember in, I think it was 99 or 2000, going to the GABF, and there was a beer called Wanker Beer.
Wanker?
Wanker Beer. Oh. And it was a shitty lager, and they had, practically topless ladies standing around.
Yeah.
And you knew it was going to be shitty. And I wanted, wanted to just go try the beer.
How big was the line?
It was pretty full of bros.
Yep.
And because of said ladies.
Yep.
And this was also 99, 2000. And so, but it was still GABF.
Yeah.
Come on, motherfuckers.
Well, still, and, it would still happen in 2018, unfortunately.
I know. Yeah, sure. But I just remember it was clearly somebody just cashing in on beer was big, and they just made, I never did try it. I couldn't bring myself to, I just wanted to try it so that I knew for sure that it was a shitty beer. But I was like, you know what? I already know it's a shitty beer.
You've always wanted to have a wanker in your mouth.
That was actually something. It was their tagline was something like that.
I'm sure,
like
it was.
You need a wanker in. Yeah, it was almost that. Might have actually been it. I don't. There was a point where I remembered what it was, but in the days of cell phones, of course, I would have taken a picture, but not then.
I would like to see in that breath. I would like to see a little. I would like to see brewers in particular, take themselves a little bit more seriously. It can get pretty embarrassing when you're at a festival and the drunkest people there are the brewers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For how particular we are and protective we are about our trade, when we have the opportunity to show that passion to a broad range of people, we kind of drop the ball on that. Mm-hmm. And marketing, like what you mentioned, should just stop.
Right.
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. You're just selling product. You're not selling your product.
Don't get me wrong, man. I like a shitty joke just as much as the next guy. But I also think that we're going to see a plateau. We're not going to see a plateau, in my opinion, in ways that maybe large associations associated with the brewing industry might be imposing on us. You might see less shelf space, less supermarket space being taken up by small brewers. But I think as a whole, consumers investing their dollars in alcoholic beverages will be doing it with small local breweries more and more.
It seems
which is
like
a smaller data set. To some extent, it's almost less traceable than like whatever Kroger knows about like how many SKUs of whatever IPA they sold in six packs over the last 10 years,
Yeah. Do you think as far as speaking just solely of shelf space and things like that, there's obviously the trend of, the big boys buying out fair-sized regionals, and it seems to be, it's always, it seems to be ramping up, and the of course the whole reason that they're doing that is to secure shelf space with you know, what they hope people will buy, which is the quality beer that was being made by Goose mm-hmm. Island, Wicked Weed. Was Wicked Weed bought out? Am I making that up?
No, I might be making that up. You're not. They were bought out. I don't remember by who, though.
You know, Lagunitas and stuff Ballast like that. Point. You know, regardless, Ballast Point. Regardless of what you think about, Elysian, 10 Barrel. Regardless of what you think about those beers beforehand, you know, the truth is they're going to be on the shelf now. As other things are being squeezed out. And so it becomes a question of, well, okay, so you're a fan of beer. Do you want to be able to walk into a supermarket and get it in a bottle? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to be able to go there and drink it? And it's not, and they're not mutually exclusive, but
it's a big question. And, you know, I don't have a degree in business management or administration.
Right.
I have speculation from reading too much about beer on Twitter.
Yeah. Is it something that you talk about at work a lot?
Not necessarily for any company that I've ever been associated with. But, you know, I'm talking with friends, and I have friends that work for larger regional breweries. To make it abundantly clear, Kokanee was on my top four. Oh, yeah. I can't live without. Yeah. But it's an import, so it doesn't really affect American craft beer.
Right.
Played it safe.
Valid point.
You know, when these guys are selling or buying, I'm not totally concerned about that business move. I don't care if you want to sell your brewery. Like, if you want to sell your brewery and take your paycheck and go retire, good on you, man. Because I know you put in some sweat equity that is not in that article.
Every situation is unique.
But it should be transparent what that ownership is of that brewery.
Right.
And what. So when you do see that block of Goose IPA, 10 Barrel, Ballast Point, whatever, and they're all, you know, right next to any other large brewery product, it's like, okay, you're making it seem like it's not the same, but it is the same. And that's my problem. I don't care. And the consumer is still going to make a decision. They can still be like, well, it's $2 less, so I'm just going to buy this, and that's mm-hmm. fine. And they can vote for what they want with their wallets, but just don't lie to people. That's right. All.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Do you have, and this could be an unfair question, but do you have like a brewing hero or like a favorite brewery that you kind of model yourself after, your brewing style after, like, you know, yourself?
I don't really model myself after anybody. I'm a pretty magnetic brewer. I'll just kind of pull a little bit from everybody. I brewed a little bit with Eric Jorgensen from the North Fork Brewery on Mount Baker Highway.
A lovely human being.
Shameless plug. When I was doing some collaboration brews for the station, so. I was just like, man, this guy is so fucking cool.
Yeah. He's just one of the greatest people around, pretty much.
And like, we missed a Hob edition because we were arguing about Fritz Maytag. It's like,
that's so perfect, though.
Exactly.
Like, you know? The beer was still fine.
It was still a Baltic porter that we threw in.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Still fine. Eric's always been kind of my, like, he does something that I will never do. Like, his brewery is everything that I can't be creative. Like, that's not how my mind works. Like, he sees stuff that I can't see.
Yeah. He is a student of beer and brewing.
Yeah.
The amount of information that guy consumes pertaining to beer and brewing knowledge is astounding. And that's why he's quietly doing one of the best sour programs around.
And humbly.
Yeah, and humbly. Did I mention he's an amazing human being?
Yeah.
Amazing human being.
And he's very tall.
He's very tall. And he will hug you. Yeah. He will hug you.
Folks, you can't see us. Dave and I are 5'8 and spry.
5'8, that's very generous. I'm like 5'6.
full answer to your question. I've always admired kind of the tradition that Anchor Brewing has always upheld,
mm-hmm.
and their equipment, and their like their brewers are still in white lab coats, which is fucking badass.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Have you done the tour down there?
No, I haven't.
It's fun. I mean, it's not the brewers that give it, but the guys. I mean, you're not going to be able to ask technical questions that I wanted to ask, but the guy knows what he's talking about, or at least the guy that we had did.
Yeah.
I had.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I feel pretty fortunate that I don't have to kind of mimic anything. I never got into a position where I was like, well, fuck, I'm just going to have to like really focus on Belgian beers because the only guy I know who brews is brewing Belgian beers. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always kind of had a pretty good pool to pull from.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good problem to have here in Bellingham. I mean, between home brewers and pro brewers, there's a wealth of information and just, you know, a database of drunkenness.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do some, I mean, I say rapid fire, but you don't have to answer super quickly, but, these are just, we're getting into the fun questions now. All right. I'm going to kind of wind it down.
I'm ready.
What's your favorite grain?
Pilsner.
Pilsner malt.
From Fireman.
Yeah. Favorite hop?
Favorite non-noble, Cascade. Favorite noble, Tet.
Okay. Right. Yeah, Cascade's, again, with Sierra Nevada, it's up there.
It's pretty versatile. Tet or Saaz.
Talk to
me tomorrow at Saaz, today it's Tet.
Right. I'm high on Sterling. I like Sterling a lot because it's got that Saazy kind of thing going, but
it's a bastard.
Yeah, it's a bastard. They're all bastards. Favorite yeast?
Man. The 3470, the most broadly used lager strain on the planet, Weihenstephaner.
Which one is that? It's the Weihenstephaner.
Yeah. Okay. Even though my tenure at Chuckanut is coming to a close, I feel honored to have brewed with the proprietary Chuckanut Kolsch strain. I've never met a yeast that can do so much.
Nice. And thanks for bringing it as well. I'm pouring some right now as you're saying that. And it's delicious as always. Nice. Okay. Well, just to wrap up, this is just a question that I just love asking because it's done now. The podcast is over. They're not doing it anymore, but it's called the Dinner Party Download.
Oh, yes.
And one question they always ask is, "Yo, nice. Yeah. Tell us something that we don't know about you, or anything in general, just some whatever you want to throw out there.
You don't know about. I'm a pretty open dude.
You're the first person that's known what it was, what that podcast was. So you get the gist of what I'm asking.
Oh, that's such a good question.
I'm definitely going to keep that sigh in there.
Somebody might know it.
Okay.
This is not a fact about myself.
All right.
But I'd argue that many people do not know it. South Dakota's capital is Pierre.
Oh. Is it North Dakota's that's Bismarck?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Pierre and South Dakota do not share any common letters.
Wow. Nice. That's great. I learned two things. One, that Pierre was the capital of South Dakota, and that there are no common letters in there. Very nice.
I can see you spelling out them.
No, I believe you. I believe you. So last question. Well, almost last question. Any advice you have for aspiring brewers, whether it be on a homebrew level or a pro level, just any nugget of wisdom that you would see as you need to think about this.
Totally. Read everything.
Yeah.
And don't be intimidated by something that might seem like it's too technical for you.
Yeah.
Because it's not. Like, if you can get your hands on a book from UC Davis and you've only been homebrewing for 1 year, like, get your hands on that book and just dig into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally worth it.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to like share your passions with people.
Or your mistakes, I think.
Totally. I'll be the first to admit that, like, reaching out and networking and talking with folks has helped, like, build my beer path. Mm-hmm. I have so much appreciation for Arzu and Patrick McAvoy and Brian Cardwell. These are all people who just, like, maybe saw a little bit more in me than I saw. Maybe they saw it before I saw it.
Yeah.
And they didn't, like, sugarcoat me or overpraise me. They just kind of gently guided.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid of that. Be guided. Read everything. And read everything as technically as possible.
Yeah, I agree. Learning, you're always learning. You know, I think that was, I've said this before on this podcast, but when I was starting out, I had nobody. You know, yeah. I just wanted to try and make beer. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting alone in a house in Austin, Texas, with my friends that had brewed a few batches of beer gone. And I just brewed a brown ale from Austin Homebrew Supply.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. And the only reason that I did extract was because I was reading Papazian's book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was talking about the false bottom of the mash tun.
Yeah.
And I just had no idea what that meant and what it was.
All I know
and
is it's untrue.
I was just like, I don't understand what that means or how that would work. And once I saw it, I was like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding? It's just a filter? Oh,
totally. God.
Yeah.
So always
be learning. Like, and knowing that pro brewers, every batch doesn't turn out exactly the way that they want.
And pro brewers are more than happy to talk about
everything.
Most of us come from humble beginnings. And if you don't feel like you have a relationship with a pro brewer in your town or whatever, I guarantee your home brewers guild is going to have a Chris Brim that's been brewing for 10 years and has seen some shit and is more than happy to pour you a beer and talk to you about it.
Yeah.
So make friends, man.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Brewers like talking about beer.
Yeah.
And brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah, look up your local homebrew guild, which, you know, probably most people listening to this are in Bellingham. So look up the Bellingham Homebrew Guild.
Yeah.
There's perks, you know, if you're a paying member, you know, Menace Brewing can might be able to hook you up, you know, once you prove that you can make good beer and stuff. So it's coming. It is coming.
And our guild has been around for 10 years now. In that same breath, sorry to drag this out.
This is your interview.
When you do sit down at a tap room at a local brewery, band ears, man.
Yeah.
The people sitting at the bar, the bartender, like, say where you're from. Somebody's going to have had a beer or traveled to your town or close to your town.
Mm-hmm.
And just talking about beer, man.
Yeah. Or when you're in another town and you're at the bar, chances are one of the people next to you knows every beer that's there.
Sure.
You know, it's like, hey. You know.
And where to go next.
Yeah.
And where not to go. Like, don't just Google something and end up in this shithole.
Yeah, or look at Rate Beer or something. Yeah. You know, like beer like nerd or whatever.
Talk to the bartender. If the bartender tells you to go somewhere, go there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Is there anything you want to add? Anything I missed? Anything that you feel is important?
No. It's always exciting. It's always changing.
Yeah.
Don't ever do interviews with Dave Morales. He'll pour you beer. He'll flatter you. It's terrible. Dude,
this is a sober one. You listen to that Jorgensen one, right? Yeah. We both got to get up early tomorrow. Well, hey, Steve, thanks for coming, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks to everybody we mentioned.
Yeah. Nice. Cheers.
Thank you.
Got to get the clink.
Yeah.
Pretty solid dude. I enjoyed getting to know him better and learning his brewing origin story. Funny guy. Hope you enjoyed it as well. As always, we love to hear your feedback. What do you want more of or less of? Drop us a line and let us know. Your ratings on iTunes and the like help us out a lot, so if you liked it, please share us with a friend or two. This podcast is still an experiment in progress, so we're relying on you to let us know if you'd like it to continue or not. Reach out. Speak your mind. But most of all, thank you. Tapped In is a production of Bellingham Tap Trail with content direction by Scott Pelton. I'm Dave Morales, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.